Imagine a world where innovation knows no bounds. At BAE Systems Fast Labs, we're pioneering advanced technology and defense research, shaping the future of safety and security. Explore our website to uncover a realm of cutting-edge projects, collaborations, and visionary thinkers. Whether you're a tech enthusiast, a defender of freedom, or just curious, Fast Labs is where groundbreaking solutions are born. Join us and be part of the future today. Visit www.baesystems.com/fastlabs. Welcome to From the Crow's Nest, a podcast on electromagnetic spectrum operations, or EMSO. I'm your host, Ken Miller, Director of Advocacy and Outreach for the Association of Old Crows. Thanks for listening. In this episode, I discuss software-defined radio technology with Doug Thornton from Battelle. Before I get to our conversation, I just have a few thoughts and notes to share with you. First, believe it or not, Congress is approving long-stalled aid packages to Ukraine, Israel, and the Indo-Pacific this week. The House passed three separate packages last week before heading to recess, and the Senate is taking them up this week. The first to pass is likely today on Tuesday, the 23rd of April. The first to pass will be the Ukraine aid package, which is a $60.8 billion, followed by the Israel aid package, which will be $26.4 billion, and then finally $8.1 billion for the Indo-Pacific. The package also includes measures to seize Russian assets, which will help pay for the aid package, impose sanctions on Iran, and require TikTok's Chinese owner to divest the app. So a lot of controversy in this aid package over the last few months. The AOC doesn't take a position on the aid packages. We have members on all sides of the issues. But obviously, for those who listen to our show regularly, you know that I have expressed my personal support for the Ukraine package. Pure and simple, this is an EW fight, and Ukraine probably cannot win without U.S. support. So it's good to see that U.S. Congress able to pull back some from the politicizing of this aid, and hopefully it'll help Ukraine turn the corner here as we enter the summer months, more than 2 years after the war started. Also, there's no easy transition to this next topic, but I just want to again highlight our new AOC member subscriber-only episodes that we record with a live virtual audience, and we release those in between our regular episodes. We are getting very close to putting these episodes behind a paywall, but they are still free for any listener who wants to participate. So go to crows.org for more information on how to join as an audience member. Our next subscriber episode will be recorded on next Tuesday, April 30th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. So hope to see you there. My guest today is Doug Thornton, a technical director at Battelle. We were having a conversation a few months ago about software-defined radios. Very interesting topic. It's central to today's EW capabilities. He was very knowledgeable on the topic, and so I wanted to have him on the show to discuss this technology and where it's going in the future. For those of you who don't know what software-defined radios are, they are a type of radio communication system where components that have traditionally been implemented in hardware, such as mixers, filters, amplifiers, so forth, are instead implemented by means of software on a personal computer or an embedded system. So while a basic radio transceiver distinguishes and processes different radio frequencies using physical hardware, a software-defined radio uses digital signal processing to convert radio frequency signals into digital signals as soon as they're received. It provides a significant advantage how this is set up and provides a lot greater flexibility and able to manipulate radio signals without altering any physical components. So it really aids the warfighter in managing and operating in the electromagnetic spectrum. It's critical to today's EW, so I think it's a really important conversation to have. So with that said, I welcome Doug Thornton from From the Crow's Nest. Doug, it's great to have you on the show.
Thanks for inviting me on, Ken.
So our listeners will recognize you from, I had the opportunity to sit down with you some point last year to talk a little bit about Battelle and the RavenStar program. And in our conversations, we were talking about really just the opportunity space as it relates to software-defined radios. And so I wanted to have you on as a subject matter expert to talk a little bit about that technology. What does that technology mean for how it's changing the way we fight, how it changes the way we communicate, And looking forward into the future through the evolution of this technology, what are some of the things that we're looking for or looking toward? So just to get started, you know, I wanted to kind of, you know, for our listeners here who may not be electronic warfare experts such as myself, you know, could you tell us a little bit, when we say software-defined radio, what are we talking about and how has that changed from traditional communications?
An approach to traditional communications, you have an antenna that captures or radiates electromagnetic energy, some form of amplification, filtering, and then you need to convert that frequency, that point in spectrum, to operate at a different point in spectrum, something that the rest of your hardware can process. And then you have techniques to do what's called modulate that signal. So in an FM radio, you modulate the frequency while retaining the same amplitude of signal, which allows you to have this constant power received by the radio. In amplitude modulation, you would have a device that changes how much radio power was being radiated and therefore how much was received. And then that goes into a system that would convert it first into like dots and beeps and no beeps for Morse code, but then in voice audio and then convert it to data. So what a software-defined radio does is it seeks to replace as many of those parts as possible with software. So when you move from a hardware solution to a software solution, you enable further agility in what you're doing, so you can change how you process that signal based upon the software that develops. And then you also take it out of the realm of hardware development, which is expensive, time-consuming. Laying out a circuit board is a special technique, to a software domain where you can follow more agile development processes, and you can do so even without physical hardware. So with software-defined radios, you can tune in an experiment in a completely simulated and modeled environment so that you, even high schoolers, middle schoolers, can play with waveforms and learn about using RF spectrum in a environment where they don't actually have to radiate and possess expensive hardware.
And it would seem that with, you know, software-defined radios today, that you mentioned the agility factor. As you're trying to understand and define various threats, various waveforms that are out there that you need to respond to, that ability to experiment, to tweak, and to basically, does it allow you to send a specific solution, so to speak, or a specific solution to the fighting force, more real time than obviously making a hardware solution, where you almost have to be certain about what you're building and what you're manufacturing and putting out to the force. So does it provide a little bit more flexibility and just being able to experiment and figure it out on the fly for your warfighter?
Yes, it certainly has the promise to do so. The realization, there's always the devil is in the details, particularly with spectrum operations.
So talk about that a little bit, you know, this idea of the notion of the promise that's there and the devil in details. What are some of the things that make that a little bit more difficult to realize?
Some of the things are the limited capabilities within a software-defined radio. So there's something called dynamic range, which is how big of a signal can I hear next to how small of a signal can I still detect, pick out, and make sense of. So if you are flooded in an environment with very big signals, as you might be in a contested environment, even though those two signals aren't necessarily on top of each other, if they're within the same bandwidth, then the little signal becomes unobservable. So that is one challenge, and that's typically solved with filtering. But then once you start applying filtering, you can take away some of that agility. So there are a variety of techniques you can try to do to get around that. They all add complexity to the front end, but there is this physical realization that the spectrum is a very dynamic and harsh environment. And anytime you try to make something general, you're giving up the capability that something specific would have. So that's a lot on the receive side. The transmit side is a whole another challenge because you can't just transmit everywhere. Their radios typically go through some sort of approval process that has a frequency and even a waveform associated with it. And as you look at those approval processes, a software-defined radio can violate many of those and create high complexity to those just getting something certified. So oftentimes what you see is a software-defined radio will be used as the basis of a device. And then by the time they have built around the transmitter and receiver and the required filtering to meet compliance and good neighbor behavior, it is no longer fully flexible. You have given up that flexibility. But what you have done is you have kicked off that development and you're not starting from zero when you started designing that radio system. You're designing something existing, so you've accelerated. So there's a trade-off, but ideally, in a perfect world, you'd have infinite dynamic range, the ability to use whatever spectrum that you sense is available, and then that would be the ultimate.
So it seems like, you know, as you're peeling back each layer of the onion, there's a little bit more complexity that you're dealing with, and it's making it a little bit, it's making the solution a little bit more complex to realize and to field. It seems like a really dramatically different way to develop and buy systems than maybe DoD is used to. But yet it's proven to, as I understand it, it's proven to be very cost effective, or at least more cost effective. So could you talk a little bit about, you know, that how DoD is adapting its ability to develop and field software-defined radios versus how they used to, and that cost-effective trade-off that they're experiencing?
So where they're leveraging these software-defined radios, one, they have many more waveform flexible radios than they have in the past. Now, those radios typically are still shipped with a suite of radio waveforms that they're capable of utilizing or prosecuting. Some of them are shown to be adaptable with time. So there's a lot, initially in the early 2000s, there's a lot of excitement about software-defined radio and what could be accomplished. And some of the realization of that first phase of development and adoption caused the financial and deployment challenges. But I think as technology is caught up with that vision, that they are realizing benefits. And then as you look towards the open architectures, the government is getting to the point where they are able to define these open architectures for their radio systems. So you look at the CMOS and the modular open RF architecture all the way down to the Vita 49 specs. And then there's other Vita specs for the chassis and how radio cards can plug in. All of that's getting standardized, and that standardization is enabled by the ability to software define these radios.
Standards are really kind of the lifeblood to the success of software defined radios. You mentioned open systems architecture, the ability to plug and play, have a standard to which these systems are built to. And this has been a priority of DoD for quite a while. Could you talk a little bit about, just from a process standpoint, how is the development of standards for software-defined radios? How is the process going? Are we moving fast enough in developing these standards? I feel like sometimes every time a new standard is released, there's other standards that it changes, and there's a cascading effect, and you end up with a set of standards, which of course then is not a standard. So it gets a little frustrating. And it's like, what is the end goal that they're moving toward? Are we going there fast enough?
Every standard will have compromise, and the compromise will result in a certain mission set or a certain functionality not being supported, or one set of functionality being more favored in that. So one of the observations that I have made is, particularly the Vita standard, there are a number of things out there that are capable of out of the box listening to a Vita 49 data stream coming in. and then displaying those signals, and that it's very easy to build on top of. So that standard on the receive side seems fairly mature and can be effective. But the standard itself describes itself as an architecture. So there are many architectural decisions that you need to make when deploying a network like this. And being that there can be architectural decisions and what is supported and what is not supported, that says there's a parameter set. And when you say, I'm going to build a widget, you're going to select parameter set. Somebody else is making the other end. They have selected a different parameter set. At some point, you need to do what's called a interoperability exercise and make those two work together. So achieving that whole plug and play is complex activity. But you can also look at the challenges they are having in the 5G commercial telecommunications. So there's a big push for very similar open standards, and they're out there, they're deployed, there's test suites available, but there's still disagreements on what should be incorporated in a radio and whatnot. So one of the challenges with software-defined radios is latency and a question of what is a radio. So in both the federal and commercial markets, when you think about a radio 30 years ago, it's a box with an antenna port coming out that you hook a coaxial cable into, and either a telephone-like device or an Ethernet port coming out the other side. Now what has happened with the software-defined radios is people realize that, well, I can put one part up near my antenna and improve RF performance, get rid of the coaxial cable, run a fiber cable, and then put just a regular computer to run my software-defined radio on that part. So now you've taken your radio, you divide it in two, and then what part's the radio, how you divide it. So if you look at commercial telecom, they have a series of what they call splits of, here's everything that we need to do in a radio. And then if you're split 8, you do this. If you're split 7, you do that. If you're split 7.2, you do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Down to split 6, and it just keeps going ad nauseum. So there's even difficulty in defining where that is. And that's because different contexts, different mission sets have different needs. Some are require extremely low latency. So when a signal comes in, you need to think about that signal and respond in microseconds or less. So you can't pipe that down pipe. Now, there might be a software-defined radio down on the other side of an Ethernet cable or a fiber optic cable that's doing the processing, telling what to do. But it all becomes very context-specific of what you're trying to achieve, where to define that.
Hello, everyone. I want to take a short break to thank BAE Systems Fast Labs for the continued support for our From the Crow's Nest podcast. I am pleased to be here today with Bill Watson, Chief Scientist at BAE Systems Fast Labs. Bill, it's great to be here with you. Now, BAE Systems Fast Labs is BAE Systems Research and Development and Production Organization. Can you tell us a little bit about Fast Labs as well as your background?
Yes, and thank you for having me. BAE Systems Fast Labs is dedicated to innovating disruptive next-generation solutions for the critical defense and intelligence challenges. Of course, electronic warfare is one of our key focus areas, but in addition to that, we also do research in autonomy and AI, sensing and response, advanced microelectronics, communications, and navigation. I've been working in the RF, that is radio frequency research community, for over 20 years, a short time in the United States Air Force, followed by specific research and development. My work in the last 20 years has been singularly focused on DARPA research, and within the last 10 years at BAE Systems Fast Labs specifically. Technology we work on spans sensor processing to high-level sense-making, up to tactical and operational-level autonomy and decision-making support. And one of the key differentiators about BAE Fast Labs is the research that we do is intended to find its way to benefit the warfighter.
This has been an important topic through many of our recent episodes here on From the Crow's Nest. Can you talk a little bit more about that technology? And for our audience, how does it change or affect our EW capabilities that we're trying to field?
In our work with leading DoD customers like DARPA or AFRL, we focus on developing technologies that will advance future solutions from overcoming today's challenges to developing technologies never before thought to be possible. We then transition our technology to feelable products to benefit our warfighters through partnership with BAE Systems Electronic Systems product lines. As a specific example, I thought I'd use a movie you may or may not be familiar with. It was called Battle Los Angeles. It was from 2011. And in that movie, aliens had invaded. And what the characters in the movie found is that whenever they keyed their microphones on their radios, they could be easily geolocated and targeted. What the movie presented as science fiction for us is, in fact, science fact. This is the type of technology that we work on and exist today where the physics meets the real world.
This sounds like absolutely fascinating work. What is the next area that you see for research and development? And if anyone is interested in learning more, how can they reach out to you?
Well, we can't say too much because of the sensitivity of our work at classification levels. But in Fast Labs, we are always working on the future state. No matter what the future threats are, we will continue to focus on solving the hardest problems to benefit the warfighter. If you're interested in more information about Fast Labs, you can connect with us on our website at basystems.com/fastlabs.
Well, thank you, Bill, for joining me here on From the Crow's Nest. And now it's time to get back to our show. So it sounds like even in the commercial sector, you know, they're not struggling necessarily, but they're facing challenges with developing standards. Are there lessons that DoD, the military community, can learn from the commercial, how they're handling it, and vice versa?
There's always opportunity to learn from watching somebody else try to walk down a very similar path. The lessons learned from the commercial side is you need big stakeholders to say that this is what I want and to put a stake in the sand. And then the federal government itself has recognized, okay, one of these challenges is doing testing. How do we get more test capabilities? So what the DoD could do, the federal government could do for defense applications is key stakeholders and test and compliance. So, okay, you want to be compliant to an open standard. Here's a way of you going in and testing it and saying, yes, you are compliant. So that way you can get past 75-80% of that interoperability space that you need to traverse before you even have to be introduced to somebody.
With the standards, as well as they're being promulgated and implemented into the software-defined radios and their systems are fielded, one of the other benefits is that it's an ease of upgrade. So it's very easy. And we talk a lot about this in the EW world about reprogramming systems on a rapid pace at the speed of the fight and being able to get that to the warfighter. And this is one of the areas where software-defined radios, there's a clear benefit to that ease of upgrade at the speed of the fight. Could you talk a little bit about how that upgrade takes place technically, as also just kind of where you see that benefit going?
So if the promise of software-defined radio is you can send it data through its existing interface, it can take that data, reprogram itself, and then operate on a new interface it just received. And you could do that with hobbyist-grade software-defined radios today. Why wouldn't you do that in the field? Well, there's security risks. There are other certification challenges. So how long does it take to certify a particular waveform to on a particular radio? And now you go and say, hey, I added a little bit to the waveform to improve this performance parameter. How many recertifications does that trigger? Does it trigger, oh, you're doing a new waveform. Now the characteristics of the power that you're radiating may change. Do you need to do a new co-site interference? So that's where you have two radios near each other. How do they impact each other? So it becomes one of not necessarily the inherent capability of the software-defined radio. You can change those over in milliseconds. What is the impact to the system? What is the impact to the certifications? Because what you don't want is somebody with a widely deployed software-defined radio push a new software update that goes in, and now it is broadcasting on a public safety channel accidentally. So there are good reasons for checks, balances, guardrails before pushing new updates. But that's receive side, always easier because you're not interacting with the environment. You're understanding the environment. And that's where you see a lot of wide bandwidth capture combined with AI and ML approaches to try to figure out how to prosecute those signals as rapidly as possible.
So you mentioned some of the security risks. Obviously, with any technology, it's not all perfect. There are problems, there are negatives. And some of them, you know, obviously you mentioned security. You have different limitations that you confront as you're trying to upgrade the system, complexity of software, so forth. Could you talk a little bit about some of the top challenges that you as a technologist at Epitel, when it comes to software-defined radios, what are the top challenges you're always facing trying to solve to mitigate?
One of the top challenges is the technical talent to deploy these systems. So you start with somebody with FPGA experience, then they need digital signal processing experience, and you keep further necking down to very specific skill sets for that FPGA portion. Wideband RF design is a very challenging thing where you have you need that electrical engineering background, it's physics, it's experience, but also once you start adding manufacturability into that, there's a whole another level of breadth that you need to bring to the table to successfully deploy one of these systems. And then, like you were saying, there is security. So it would be pretty hard to hack an AM radio or a shortwave radio that's connected directly to the microphone. That's a pure EW attack. Just put energy in and the speaker will change going out. Now, with software-defined radio, I spent over a decade of my career doing cyber analysis on things. And I like to say, I can't hack a rock. I can hack a computer, I can hack a phone, but there's no fundamental theory or explanation of why. There's no first principles of cyber. But it's even lacking that type of understanding, once your device starts to do some thinking, that's when it becomes vulnerable. And a software-defined radio is replacing hardware, which is just responding to the environment, to something that is performing thinking that is encoded by a human, and that becomes vulnerable. So anytime you get into the demodulation, the making sense of the information that's coming over, you have opened up a backdoor from the RF interface to being taken advantage of. Now, supply chain and all that other type of cyber vulnerabilities, that all is there and magnified with anything software-based.
Speaking to electromagnetic warfare and electromagnetic spectrum operations specifically, you know, could you talk a little bit about how software-defined radios are kind of changing the landscape of how we conduct operations, as well as cyber operations? If you look around the world, you know that it's not a peaceful place right now. Obviously, you have the war in Ukraine, you have Middle East, you have a lot of current operations that we're learning lessons from. As it pertains to software-defined radios, how are they changing the landscape of how we fight from an EW and MSO perspective?
Like with any technology, it is used by both the good and the bad. So it is enabling both sides of the conflict. So because hobbyist-grade equipment is out there, it is very easy to put together a new and not seen before system with a couple hundred dollars. And that is enabling to low-budget adversaries the ability to do beyond line-of-sight communication through whatever means is enabling to the adversaries as they utilize spectrum in different ways. But it's also enabling to our Department of Defense as the people who effectively invented software-defined radio through their investments. It enables them to look at more spectrum at once or not be predefined in what spectrum they're looking at. So as those adversaries pop up in new places, you can more immediately respond to that threat or even be able to fingerprint that threat with what you have now. So the amount of spectrum being used has dramatically changed and will continue to change. The agility within that spectrum conversely changes, but it's also a threat to systems. So frequency hopping systems that used to be protected because nobody would keep up and predict where they're going to be can now be completely observed at once by consumer grade hardware.
So one of the aspects, you know, we were talking about this topic in a previous episode of From the Crow's Nest. On our subscriber edition, we were talking about some of the challenges in spectrum management and more broadly, the need for better battle management of our network systems. In what ways can SDRs kind of change, enable better dynamic spectrum management in congested environments? Does that hold some keys to how we can solve some of the challenges of how do you get all these systems to work in the various bands that you need them, taking into account the commercial, the private sector, and some of the adversarial systems out there?
Yeah, and then the further challenge is that commercial and private sector bands are different in different regions. So there are many challenges of where people are at in spectrum, what they're being used at, and then you go into a contested environment where the adversary is utilizing jamming spectrum. So anytime you are unpredictable to the adversary, the better you will be. Because if they know that you are going to be operating at 2.345 gigahertz, they know exactly what they need to do. If they know you're going to be somewhere between 1 and 10 gigahertz, they're going to have a lot harder time defeating whatever you bring. So with that, agility requires a whole lot more coordination, planning, because you got to talk at the right bands. You got to have that coordination. It's almost like a key management, but key management for spectrum utilization. So software-defined radios will enable that. So rather than the old radios where you're selecting from a few channels, you could be selecting from thousands of effective channels. But then it also, you have to bring that to a little sense of reality that spectrum in VHF will propagate very differently than spectrum up in C-band. So just because you can make a link or at VHF does not mean you're going to be able to make that same link with the same power up at C-band, even though you're like, hey, there's a lot of this available spectrum there. So that's one enabling piece to the battlefield is that agility. There's the promise of cognitive radios that will take the human out of the loop of the whole spectrum assignment process. So it looks at the spectrum and then figures out how best to use it and can even self-coordinate. So there's been a lot of research in that area that could be deployed. There are challenges now with cognitive radio. So how do you get a radio certified that when they say, what frequency does it operate on? You say, I don't know. All of them, a lot of them. So how is that going to go through a certification process? How can a spectrum manager predict how that's going to behave? There's that sort of thing. But then also there's the spatial agility that software-defined radios will give to the battlefield. And that's not just broadcasting everywhere. So right now you typically have radios that broadcast either in all directions or they broadcast point to point with a very focused beam that's not designed to move around. What software-defined radios allow you to do is through beam steering, beam forming, phased array operations, you can now have a little bit of the best of both worlds. You can cover omnidirectional space, but only transmit in the directions you want. So that would also be able to, so you could spatially reuse the spectrum, get more. That's what's going on in telecommunications. But you could also prevent your adversary from seeing or block out interference. That's another way that SDRs will enable and provide beyond what they have today.
Do you think we have the regulatory regime processes set for some of those challenges you talk about, kind of having to face some of the regulatory changes in terms of spectrum management? Do we have those in place? I mean, what do we need to do to make sure that we have the ability to actually make the changes we need both technologically and administratively?
I haven't personally walked through the entire process of certifying a radio system. I know that looking at the process and planning on systems to go through, they are backwards looking. Can they be made to be forward looking, particularly with how spectrum is owned in the United States? That's a large challenge of how you would do that. But there is a assumption that you have a device, you can take the antenna off and measure it, and then you can characterize an antenna and then say, this is how it's going to perform. And you assign waveforms, that no longer needs to be the case. But then how do you protect the people who have purchased spectrum? You don't want $200 software-defined radios with 20 watts of power going out to anybody who just wants to start experimenting on any band. That's a recipe for disaster. But also, those hobbyists are your next generation of engineers that are going to be crows talking on these podcasts.
So moving, as we wrap up our time here, as I mentioned at the top of the show, you're the technical director at Battelle. One of the things that I've found fascinating talking with you and your colleagues over the last, year or so is just how adept Battelle is at kind of looking around the corner, kind of seeing where we need to be in the future and kind of trying to pursue that. When you get into SDRs, sitting back, where do you see us in 5 years going, or what specific capability or technological aspect are you see developing in the next 5 years that we really need to focus our energy on to make sure that we have the best software-defined radios in the field?
What I would hope to see is cost affordable, many band single chip solutions that can have a very, very wide instantaneous bandwidth. So very high sample rate. So things to build the next generation of arrays out of that would give you a lot of flexibility, but also be batteries included per se to be easier to put down, easier to make new systems out of. So that would be great, seeing the being able to move from FPGA to regular CPU or GPU programming. That would open up the number of properly skilled individuals to contribute to this field. So there's, like I mentioned before, there's only so many FPGA DSP programmers out there, and it's hard to get into. It's hard to learn those because the cost barriers are high. Now people can play with something called GNU Radio to learn about software-defined radios on their home PC, and they can use a GPU or their CPU. So the closer we get the software development environment to be accessible to individuals, the more hobbyist, the more self-learning, the more interest you create, and the more accessible the field becomes to talent.
Well, thank you, Doug, for taking time. This is a great topic, and I'm sure that it's worth, revisiting here in a little bit to kind of see where things are going. But I do appreciate you taking time to join me here on From the Crow's Nest.
Thank you.
That will conclude this episode of From the Crow's Nest. I'd like to thank my guest for joining me for this discussion. Also, don't forget to review, share, and follow this podcast. We always enjoy hearing from our listeners, so please take a moment to let us know how we're doing. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Fast Labs, powered by BAE Systems, is at the forefront of advanced technology and defense research, development, and production. They're pushing boundaries, breaking barriers, and innovating for a safer world. Check them out at www.baesystems.com/fastlabs.